This is real news. Where is it? I'm Peter Laufer, co-director of the University of Oregon UNESCO Crossings Institute.
Joining me today on Real News is my colleague from our Portland campus, Professor David Ewald, and his professorial title plays directly to what we're talking about here, a professor of brand innovation. And David, the idea here is to help us all news consumers differentiate between that which we consider has veracity and that which is propaganda or misinformation, disinformation. Sure. And the reason why it's so appropriate to talk to you is because branding is what so many of those who are foisting disinformation, outright lies, branding is what they're doing because the technology now is so malleable.
Sure.
You and I could build a website in the 10 minutes we're going to be talking, and it would look real, as fake as it would be. So what are some of the devices you can offer to news consumers to differentiate between that which is real news and that which isn't?
Right. Well, I think to your point, the idea of branding, I think anyway, with the internet and the spread of how we consume information now, I think we came up in consumer culture and associated logos and branding and all of the things that a brand is with authority of some kind. And I think that has broken several times over, sort of invisibly, where that sort of trusted source of pick a brand and a news source of any kind. And to your point, you can make something look professional, but doesn't mean it's professional. And so I think, what can people do? Unfortunately, I think it means checking sources and looking at who's paying for that website to be in front of you, or who served up the banner ad to get you to click on something to go to that website. And really, really
shrouded very easily and skillfully also.
Oh, of course. Yeah. But the maze that I fear that we may be trapped in, where as normal news consumers, because A, nobody takes the time to do that. And B, it is easy to shroud all of the lies in layers of funding and organizations that themselves sound professional, the funding organizations. It's tricky. To me, I think I have intentionally tried to skew algorithms in some sense by going off map and intentionally finding other news sources, for instance. For simplicity, I think we can look at right and left news, but consuming both of those and intentionally consuming both of those, in part because then anybody who's trying to track how I consume news doesn't exactly know where I sit and doesn't know why.
What you mean by going off map?
So going off map.
The out there can't figure out who you are.
More or less, yeah. I don't do that with great intention beyond, I recommend it in general to, at minimum, hear multiple perspectives and sort of create this aggregate view of what is true. And so if you hear this source says one thing, this source says something else on the same topic, maybe the truth is somewhere between those two. Maybe it's completely adjacent. But I think going off map in terms of what they expect and who's tracking what, at minimum, to see different sources of information.
And then if you do get something, so for example, you and I could found right now the Portland Institute for News Veracity, and you could quickly sure. design a logo for us, and I could design or create some kind of tagline, all the news you need, and it's right. all correct, we're
right.
done. And
yeah.
we put that up. And so then if we generate falsehoods, it's snowing today in Portland, when
right.
actually it's 102 degrees, then if somebody is a news consumer and they encounter this fatuous site that you and I just created and this information, and they think, oh no, it's snowing and my grandmother lives there and she's going for a walk,
mm-hmm.
then would the advice be go find some other sources? Something that you maybe think is legitimate, like the Oregonian, the National
sure.
Weather Service, a half a dozen of these, and compare and contrast?
To some extent, I think so. And some examples, actually, recently. So I've been lucky to have traveled to Cuba a number of times and have friends in Cuba. And so with the recent Cuba protests that were happening and all of the spin that was happening in terms of, I mean, like the U.S. politicians really, really seized on that happening. And I mean, to be honest, I still don't exactly know what happened in those Cuba protests. However, I was able to talk directly with a couple friends who lived there, and it sounded to me very akin to the Portland protests in summer 2020, where there's two or three blocks that, yes, there were some pretty active blocks. However, the whole of Portland, as people from my family, for instance, calling us saying, are you safe? And of course we're safe. And the same thing happened in Cuba. So I feel like that vetting, even if it's a personal friend or perhaps another news source, I do think it's important to create this sort of aggregate view.
So maybe not just news sources that you think are legitimate, but also a phone call.
Totally.
Somebody you happen to know in the region, or even somebody you don't know, call up an appliance repair store and ask them to look out the window and is the city burning?
Yeah, well, and I mean, I think your example of calling grandma if it's snowing in Portland, I would say that is a lost art that we have, that you should actually call grandma and ask her if it's snowing and if she's okay, because even that is a huge lift in our lives these days.
The lost art of talking on the telephone, the lost
yes,
art
exactly.
of reaching out to a real person and not just taking the incoming that is being shunted at us.
Exactly. Which so I know talking, is tough to do.
Excuse me, go ahead.
Oh, I just said, I know that's tough to do. There are fire hoses of information that are thrown at us, and we consume them actively on our phones, willingly. And so the time that it takes to say, hey, maybe I should call grandma in Portland, there will be something else, and then there is something else. And so I think being able to take that time to maybe understand for yourself what rises above the barometer to say, actually, I care enough about this one thing to follow up on it in some meaningful way, rather than just take it at the headline and leave it at that.
Be our own news reporter.
Or at least fact checkers in some way. But I understand that the conundrum here is how do you check the facts, and what, you know, what sources do you go to check the facts?
So we're looking at the negatives. What are the positives in the news context of brand innovation? What does brand innovation mean as the disrupted world of journalism reinvents itself?
Well, I mean, I think I'm a believer in starting small. And I think that this is one of the challenges that we face, is that we're looking for these solutions that are monolithic in nature, to say, okay, if there's this huge problem with fake news, the misinformation, disinformation, how do we solve that as a whole? And I will be honest, I don't think that our structures of governance are coming to save us anytime soon. I think they're several years behind in terms of how we even think about all of the laws that might need to exist in terms of how we consume information. So I'm a believer in starting small, and whether that means on a local level or trying to create the news sources in some capacity. You know, in my own history, there's a project that was right after the tsunami and earthquake in Japan, where there was a sort of a vacuum of information about where radiation was or wasn't. And of course, that sort of information is very needed in the moment by the normal people who are on the ground. It is also probably, and I think was very, just the governments didn't want necessarily to share that information in as active of a way as they might have. And there was almost a very quickly crowdsourced website that we made. So I think to your example, we could make a website, make it look good. And we did that with radiation data. Very luckily, there were a group of people around that catalyzed into this organization. And so it started with this just very simple idea. Could we plot data points on a map to say this is where radiation is? But it grew very quickly into, and we had a number of people who said, this is not proper. This is not science. This is not journalism. And we asked them to help us make it that. And so I feel like that sort of nugget of an idea to launch that website that you're talking about very quickly, flawed as it may be, and improve it very quickly and gather people into the mix who will be detractors at first to say, this is, you're doing something that is wrong. But if you can get those people to turn around and say, well, actually help us make it right. And all of a sudden, that same organization, when you fast forward 8 years, is doing keynote speeches at the IAEA conference, which is the governing body of energy and atomic energy.
So in fact, it was established and it was somewhat amorphous, but then it self-corrected.
Exactly, exactly.
And it's not something that requires the contemporary technology, because as you tell that story, I think back to the 80s and the Loma Prieta earthquake in San Francisco. I was working at KCBS, the radio station at the time, and there was so much damage and so much injury scattered over so wide a territory, we asked listeners to call.
Right.
Because that augmented the work of the first responders. And there may have been some initial flawed information. There may even have been some who were intentionally providing this information. But the process over a few days of taking these calls self-corrected.
Exactly.
And it helped the firefighters, it helped the police, it helped the ambulance crews know what was going on where. And it
exactly
informed the audience, the larger radio audience.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, I think that sort of crowdsourced information, if I can call it that, it does self-correct very quickly because you can spot anomalies. If you have enough data, all of a sudden you can see this one Geiger counter that we have, uploading data to our website is just totally off. And the area around it is all somewhat in the same, neighborhood of numbers. And so the more data that you have, the easier it is to spot anomalies.
Yes. And in the case of the phone calls, if somebody had called up and said, Sausalito is destroyed, and then two dozen people called and said, I'm in Sausalito.
No problem. Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Then you start to get some sense of purpose. Well, before we say goodbye, David Ewald, in the context of brand innovation, do you think it's a problem that there's false information out there? Or do you think that which we've been talking about, the self-correcting potential, is compensating for whatever damage that false information that we do know is out there?
Sure.
Is causing.
Perhaps a bit of both. My fear is that there are, I believe, in a number of actors, whether they're companies, whether they're people, organizations, who can make a lot of money on the lack of information or the cloudiness of what's going on. And so I feel like as soon as money gets into the mix, there's incentive to intentionally use that. In ways that perhaps in an ideal world where you could course correct, as we're saying, and I fear that you can also turn the knob and say, let's just turn up the volume on the misinformation intentionally. I think that's what's happening. So that's my fear.
So we just have to do our best to be critical thinkers and educate ourselves and try to surround ourselves with people we trust.
I think so. And I think, again, going back to this notion of starting small, I think trying things and being willing to fail, I think that itself is, I mean, if you look at the flow of money in terms of startups, you have a runway of time. And if you, whatever the barometers are of success are, if you don't make it, you don't make it. And I think that we need time to both fail, but fail with purpose and improve it and course correct. I think it will take time.
Professor David Ewald from the University of Oregon School of Journalism and Communication, thank you for joining us today on Real News.
Yes, thanks for having me, Peter.
You've been listening to Real News. Where is it? I'm Peter Laufer, co-director of the University of Oregon UNESCO Crossings Institute. Join us again for more on Real News.